Streaking the Line, the official podcast of Streaking the Line. Once again, my name is Pierce, and today I've got Paul back on with me. Hello, Paul. How are you?
Howdy, howdy, man. Happy New Year.
You as well. Yeah, did you have a good holiday season?
Yeah, pretty low key. Got to binge on some football and
Yeah.
avoid too much UVA basketball.
Did you win any fantasy leagues?
No, I had the joys of drafting both Justin Jefferson and Nick Chubb with most of my early picks. So I decided pretty early on that we were playing for next year.
All right. Well, that'll happen. That'll
Yeah.
happen. I got some bragging rights locked down for the
Oh,
first time
look
in a
at you.
while. So it's sort of why I brought it up. But yeah, it had been many years, so
Your
I'm
Lions are winning, your fantasy is winning. It's the year of the Piers.
professional football is doing okay. But we're here to talk about collegiate football, which we've had a lot of news. Sorry, we took a bit of a holiday break because Zach fled the country and I was under the weather over the holidays, so you don't want to hear from me. But yeah, we're back in 2024. We might end up talking a little bit about the basketball team, but I feel like there's so much to say about basketball. We might wait till next week. But we want to make sure we had an episode covering the recruiting class for Tony Elliott and company coming in. It's a lot different than the previous years of talking recruiting because of this here dadgum transfer portal makes things all crazy with the people leaving and the people coming in who were big time high school recruits, and in the case of a few of them didn't do too much yet. In the case of Chris Tyree, of course, had a very productive Notre Dame campaign. So lots to discuss on both ends. Both the transfer and the first year end. So, yeah, let's jump right into it. I guess the context that we should start with is pretty important for this class, though, right, Paul? Both with the timing of Bronco leaving and that impact on, of course, the first class, you would say that technically is Tony Elliott's first class, and then obviously the tragic shooting impacting obviously the second class and the program as a whole, and where you're able to, put your energy and your focus as a professional staff. This class, I think the narrative is trending towards like, okay, now we're actually getting some, I don't know, leeway with high school skit staffs across the Commonwealth and of course the country, and beginning to make a name for ourselves out there in the recruiting. Now, there is not a lot of star power. I mean, up for we're not going to sugarcoat anything, and of course we know that star power isn't necessarily the end all be all to recruiting, but the data does suggest if you recruit big star power guys, you're probably going to have a more successful football team. So there, right off the bat, I would say some needs are being addressed, and let's go ahead and be optimistic that the star power will start to increase down the road. If you're looking for that right now in this recruiting class, you're not going to find it, but that doesn't mean you're not going to find plenty of supportive players and guys who will probably be stars for the Virginia football team. That's a little bit different than leading the conference as far as recruiting rankings. Which is the opposite of what this class is doing, to be cynical. But I'm not trying to be negative about it. And there are a lot of pieces to be excited about. So there's your preamble, Paul. What's your thesis statement then for this recruiting class that just had its signing day?
I think this is you hit it right on the head that this is the first class that we're starting to see what the blueprint is supposed to look like. I think you're right that the last two classes, certainly that 2022 class, was that high school class of 2022 that was that early signing day in December of 21, obviously all of the turmoil in the program at that point. And that turmoil in and of itself led to even absent the tragedy, even absent the shooting in the following year, this staff was going to be behind the eight ball on assessing and connecting with those kids who were in the prospect class of 2023. So you then double whammy that with having to try and hold their program together from a very much just dealing with people, dealing with young men, since even putting the football roster construction side of it to off to the side. And yeah, the last year's class was not, neither of the last two classes, I think, have been representative of what this coaching staff is trying to do. But if you start to look at not just who these individual players are, how they're going to address individual needs, but where it is these coaches are drawing from. And you're starting to see that with the 2025 class also already starting to come together. You're seeing some continuity carry across. You mentioned Chris Tyree. He and Andre Green are the two headliners of this recruiting class, both of them coming in through the transfer portal. Both of them were four-star, borderline five-star guys, top four, top five in the Commonwealth coming out of high school, both drawn in at programs that had a little bit more sizzle, a little bit more flash, and let's be frank, a little bit and more on-field success to sell at the time they're coming out of high school. So Andre Green goes to North Carolina, sees the field a little bit there, but they've got, you can chalk it up to the depth of the North Carolina wide receiver room, Mac Brown's talent management philosophy. This is the guy that famously recruited Johnny Manziel to play safety. So
I forgot about
Andre Green then enters the transfer portal and comes back to Virginia. Chris Tyree, similar thing. Kid, you can't hardly blame a kid that's, the number two all-purpose back in his class coming out of high school. When Notre Dame comes calling, that's, the opportunity to get
Sure.
a Notre Dame education with Notre Dame level football. UVA didn't have a comparable product to offer to somebody like that at the time. But, this is a guy that wants to now come play closer to home, and UVA is there for him. Both of those guys coming out of established programs in the Richmond area, especially being an area that's the coaching staff has really improved with the depth. Chris Tyree coming out of Thomas Dale High School, which is where Ethan Mentor, who was already one of the high school commits, was coming out of as well. So you see, you've got those guys. That's one model that we're seeing, and the coaching staff has been pretty explicit about, is the in-state guys who went to the big programs and for whatever reason, whether it didn't find success, just want to come back home, whatever it is, want to come back and represent Virginia. That's actually the piece of the recruiting here that makes me the most excited and shows a real clear vision, because you get those guys in this program and the guys that were 2, 3 years behind them in high school that always looked up to those guys, that sees those guys as their role models. They th then when those guys come from high school to come visit UVA, they've got not just somebody from their own program to talk to, but somebody who can say, look, man, I bought the sizzle. I bought the flash. I bought into everything that they were selling, but those big programs are going to recruit six other guys who are at least as good as you. And they're going to promise you the sun, but not deliver on it. Or there's the risk, or even if they do deliver on it, there's something to be said for playing an hour away from home. And being, having that voice of experience, that can maybe tilt the scale some with those kids coming out of high school. It's a similar dynamic, I think, to the Andrew Brown, Ben Smiley relationship. That they were guys who were, I don't think they were contemporaries exactly in high school. Certainly, by the time Smiley was in high school, Brown would have been older enough. I can't remember if he was already in college, but it was somebody that Ben Smiley looked up to and saw as a role model, and variant was, I think, fairly public about wanting to follow that path to UVA.
Gotcha.
So that excites me to see as one of the transfer models. Were there guys that jumped out to you other than sort of those top two from who you were looking at?
A lot of tight ends was my first takeaway. But no, I think what really jumps out to me is exactly what you would identify as the biggest needs in the roster, and it's good to see them addressing it both in the first year class and the transfer class, because there's some immediate need, but also you want depth after immediate need. And so if half your transfers are coming in with just a year of eligibility, you don't want to be hamstrung by, having to guarantee you fill that spot year after year with a new dude. Anyway, it's in the trenches, right? So O-line, both immediate talent and usable depth to build back a roster, and D line as well. And I think that's what you would say were likely the biggest needs on this year's team. And we know that we've got a lot from this year's, not say successful, but reasons for optimism down the road type of roster, that those are going to be the biggest needs. And so it's a good sign to see them, at least as far as getting guys in who play those positions. That's all I can say. I'm no tape guru or anything like that, but I trust the staff to identify, at least, especially considering how early in the process a lot of them got locked in, seems to be guys they want to come fill those positions. It's also, like you mentioned, the transfer side being the most encouraging part of all this. I think that's the world we live in for the foreseeable future in this sport. Not that I would turn away any blue chip high school recruit, but we've already seen the impact that an immediate transfer can have at a program like UVA. And if you do that successfully, not only are you filling in immediate talent that can help you immediately, but there's no risk of losing that guy because he doesn't get playing time down the road, like you would with, say, a blue chip recruit who doesn't immediately pan out. You think of a lot of the blue chip guys who came through UVA, and we love them dearly, the ones that stuck around, but not all of them were immediate contributors. And you wonder, in this day and age, with the immediate transferability, does that start to get into their either their ears or their social media or the people that are close to them, versions of that. And so I just wonder if Virginia's ever going to be really successful, even if they do lock down a bunch of high four-star guys, unless those guys happen to be good enough to play right away. And that's just that. That's not a UVA problem. That's a everywhere is going to be dealing with that problem. And UVA is never. Likely never going to be the program that just has a depth chart filled with, that high four talent across the board. And so the ones who come in with that might be at a middle of the road, or I know the cynics would say even lower than middle of the road type of program. But in the grand scheme of football, I mean, we're still a power five team, right? That has had the ability to recruit well. Anyway, point being, I think locking into a real comfort zone of getting high talent couple year or year remaining transfers is going to be the way to inject talent immediately into this program. And you saw it with Malik coming to star across the ACC as a wide receiver, and then immediately being able to fill his spot with a similar skill set and even bigger name. And like you mentioned, importantly, Virginian and Chris Tyree, not to mention Green coming in with a few more years of eligibility beneath him, different type of player, but anyway, still big star power on the wide out position.
But I'm
There's reasons to be optimistic, even though, like I said, the rankings aren't quite there. The transfer rankings are pretty decent, and they do 247 and Rivals, those big services, do now publish rankings for your transfer crew coming in, because of course this is the predominant thing across the sport.
Yeah, and I was going to say just there's the Tyree and Green, big names coming out of high school that are sort of, you could say, coming down to the level of a Virginia. I think if we're, if we're being
Certainly compared to Notre Dame,
right. I mean, if you look at the transfer market, a guy like a Jordan Addison going from Pitt to USC, like that's the kind of there is, I think, that model of talent consolidation. If you're talking about some of these, high major programs building almost an all-star team of guys that have been standouts at programs that haven't been as successful. And you saw kind of a little bit of a outflux of that from UVA with the Mendenhall, Olu going to Michigan, some of the other offensive linemen who transferred and started immediately. But one of the things that UVA is done, I think, and we've seen this in two transfer cycles now, is guys who were in-state players who weren't there yet coming out of high school to play at the UVA level, that played and had success at the FCS level. So it was Tony Musket, that he was a Springfield kid, went and played at Monmouth and has now come in, and obviously the injury plagued season last year, but it, by all accounts, won the trust of the coaches, won the quarterback competition straight up. The guy that we see like that in this year's transfer class is one of those tight ends, Tyler Neville. That he was a kid from down in the Tidewater area. I want to say like Williamsburg, area. Yeah, Lafayette High School down in Williamsburg. But wasn't particularly highly recruited. I mean, he was a 79 two-star overall, 67th in the state of Virginia coming out as a recruit. So he goes to Harvard, which, no one's going to look down their nose at a kid going to Harvard.
For sure.
And goes to Harvard, is all Ivy League there a couple of times, is a very productive player in the Ivy League, and now has gotten to a point that maybe he wants, kind of like Malik Washington did, although, Northwestern certainly would have given him plenty of NFL exposure. But, it's a guy like Tyler Neville going from the Ivy League, coming up to the FBS, the Power Five level. Seeing that with some of the other transfers as well, Kendron Smith coming from Penn, as one of the defensive backs. There are guys that are, so it's interesting to see UVA recruiting the transfer portal sort of in both directions. There's not as much of the necessarily pulling from peer institutions. It's not as much, pulling from, say if pulling Malik Washington from Northwestern, I see that as sort of a peer-to-peer transfer. Pulling somebody from Notre Dame, or to be honest about it, North Carolina with their recruiting resources, that's the sort of bringing someone off of a higher major program, and then the other direction of the FCS or the Group of Five transfers up. Seeing that Drake Metcalf, who had been one of Terry Heffernan's offensive linemen at Stanford before transferring to UCF, and is now coming back as part of this transfer class. So again, it's the blueprint of what we would be looking for as if we're recruiting classes going forward. I don't want to give short shrift to the high school players that are part of this recruiting class, because there was a lot of that. Like you said, no necessarily star power. There isn't a Cam Robinson in this class, at least not by recruiting rating, recruiting rankings within the Commonwealth. But everybody in the class is rated 83 or higher, and almost everybody is 85 or higher by 24/7. So there are two guys, Ethan Minter, rated as an 83 by 24/7, but that's a tricky rating to figure out because he played quarterback, but is a dual was a dual threat quarterback and also had some potential at other positions. He's probably going to play defensive back or wide receiver at UVA. And then an offensive lineman. That's another, again, tricky to project. Prospect projections and rankings are a little bit tougher. But years ago, I sort of had gone back and looked at when UVA football is performing at its peak, what does the roster composition look like? What is the average recruiting rating of a successful UVA roster? And it's pretty much right at that 85 or 86 level of that's about the average of a successful recruiting class. And of the 13 high school commits who are part of this class, 11 of them are rated at 85 or higher. That's something that, talking about playable depth, talking about what we the dynamic you just mentioned with blue chips potentially, even if you were able to get them to Virginia, is that something that they stay, that they try and go experience the sort of the new free agent type market? Tony Elliott talked in his press conference with this recruiting class of wanting to be a developmental program, and that means finding the diamond in the rough guys, and give the coaches credit, they've they've shown some success with that. That you've got a guy like Cam Robinson that comes in as a freshman and is what, first, second team all conference. You've got a guy like Calandria that's overlooked by most major programs and yeah, had some growing pains as a freshman, but was a successful Power Five quarterback. I think that's a fair statement of where he was. So trusting the evaluation eye of this coaching staff, trusting that coaches whose experience, a lot of them has been at the service academies or the FCS level, where it's about that developmental perspective, you're starting to see, okay, that's what they're going for. And it's guys that, they're not rated a 95 overall because maybe they're not 6'5", 335 linemen coming out of high school, but they're 6'5", 280, and you can put some good weight on that frame. Or guys that are, a linebacker like Miles Brown, again, similar thing, tall, somewhat undersized at 195 pounds, but that's not a guy that's going to come in and probably be a first-year pass rusher, come off the edge disruptor type linebacker, but give him a year or two and let him play behind some of these guys that have come in out of the portal, like Corey Thomas, coming out of Akron,
That's who
in
I was going to bring
Virginia.
up. Is Corey Thomas filling a need off the trenches and not in the wide
Exactly.
receiver room that we haven't discussed yet, but coming in and based on his film, looks exactly the part that they want at that linebacker position. Is that
Exactly.
fair to say?
Yeah, I think that's right. And viewing these transfer guys, the ones that, yeah, if they've got 3 years left, that's great. If they've got a year left, what that's doing is buying you a developmental year. I think that's, that was so much of what we saw with the offensive line this year, having so many problems. Those, by the end of the year, once they'd started to play together and had six, seven, eight games of college experience, you could see the experience coming to fruition almost in real time. Frankly, none of those guys probably should have been playing this year. This is the, like, the 2024 offensive line had to play in 2023. So addressing some of those needs, it's not necessarily we are getting the bedrock cornerstone of the program for the next 3 years, but it's we are filling in the patchwork that, yeah, this guy's going to be this, he is coming in ready to be a starter today because the guy with the higher ceiling, the higher upside is a year away from being ready, or a year away from being ready to play, period, and 2 years away from being, a real high level contributor. It's you can see the path that's being laid by this coaching staff for building on their success and building a foundation for continually increased success. That it's not going to be hockey stick growth curve. It's not, it's not going to be Louisville bringing in 25 transfers. It's not going to be the Deion Sanders model. Then again, the Deion Sanders model only got what, one, two more
Doesn't seem
wins
to
more
work.
than UVA did. So
We'll see. They also addressed the quarterback. This is recent news. I think that just last night he officially committed a guy named Gavin Frakes from he's from Oklahoma but transferring in from New Mexico State, the Aggies, New Mexico State. So again, it's about building depth at the most, in this case, the most important position in the sport. And I don't know, I'd just like to see that they're willing to go across time zones to still fill the needs that they need to fill. Because I feel like the conversation about who do we recruit as an identity across the few previous staffs has gotten like unnecessarily narrow. And so I would like to see this staff. I mean, you gotta say, yeah, we want the best guys in the Commonwealth to come to their flagship school. That's a given, and obviously that's something that maybe wasn't really said by Broncos staff explicitly. And so Tony Elliott's coming in and saying that. But that doesn't mean, okay, we're only going to recruit guys from the Mid-Atlantic. And we've seen that, of course, already. We've seen guys from Florida, guys from Louisiana come in and have a lot of success here. But it also isn't this like, all right, well, we're only going to recruit guys who go to college prep private schools across the country, because that's the only one who can, actually hack it here at UVA, which of course false. So anyway, point being, it's nice to see them branch out in addition to putting some focus on the Commonwealth. And I wonder if you see any inclination with the staff and their history. Are there things now that we're building an identity as a program, and maybe there's areas or things to look for as themes with this staff that they might focus on geographically, or type of guy, or maybe even just we only want big, tall, fast quarterbacks. Everybody wants that. You know
Yeah, I think the quarterback model is a little bit out.
Right.
But I think one of the themes that we've seen is, and I'll come back to the sort of the elite prep school thing, because I think there is
We
actually a
want
little bit
those
of,
too,
right,
but
exactly. And
yeah.
there is a foundation of that that is part of, especially looking at the 2025 class. But one of the things that's really stood out to me is recruiting guys who are Power Five level talent, maybe not 4 and 5 star blue chips, but that were leaders and major contributors on very successful high school teams. That it seems like that is, when you look at guys who are committed members of the class that were coming in for official visits and things toward the end of the recruiting cycle, getting into November and December. There was a lot of, oh, they had to reschedule this trip because their team is still in the state playoffs. And that's, I think this coaching staff would almost rather have a high 3-star guy who was the captain of a state championship team than a guy who was the 4-star only contributor on a team that maybe won the district but washed out in the first round of the playoffs. That
That's
there's
interesting.
a belief that success is a mindset, that success is the competitive success is something that can be contagious almost. That what you want is the guys from those programs, that they know it's different from that means the, okay, congratulations, you won the Georgia 4A state championship is different from you know how to compete in the ACC, but you know how to prepare yourself to be competitive and to bring an edge in the level of competition where you are. So let's up that level of competition, but bring similar that you know that it's going to take something extra, something more than just showing up. So I think seeing that's been a theme over the last couple of recruiting classes is lots of guys that are on state champion, state runner up, undefeated season type football teams. I mean, the nature of high school football, you have one guy who's going to play FBS Power Five football, you're probably going to have a pretty successful high school team. But
True.
at the same time, these schools in suburban Atlanta, in South Florida, everybody's got at least one
Right.
at a lot of those schools. So that's been something that's really encouraging to see. The other thing is tapping into that prep network. This year's high school class, you've got John Rogers is the highest ranked in Virginia in this part of this recruiting class, playing at Episcopal here in Alexandria.
Yeah.
You've got kids from Avon Old Farms up in Connecticut, Deerfield Academy up in Massachusetts, and then the 2025 class, starting to look ahead, you've got right now exclusively private schools. That Cole Gear is the quarterback for Deerfield, which is where Tristan Ward is a wide receiver from Deerfield as part of the 2024 class. You've got Isaiah Robinson coming out of Trinity Episcopal in Richmond, and then John Adair from an offensive lineman from Lipscomb Academy in Nashville. All three of those are schools that, and adding in the Avon Old Farms, that New England prep school circuit. Those are schools that somebody who is already playing for one of those programs is going to have the emphasis, not just the academic background, and the skill set that it takes to probably be a successful student at UVA. And agree, full caveat of what you just said, those are not the only types of students who
Sure.
can be successful at UVA. But again, just law of big numbers, you know, if you're looking for somebody who's had college level classes, those schools tend to offer those. But at the same time, somebody who is opting for one of those prep programs has, it means they have opted for that type of academic environment, which means there is some base level of my education is important to me in a way that makes UVA a more natural fit with them. So it's, again, it's not saying that those are the only schools that UVA can recruit from or should recruit from, but it makes a lot of sense to recruit from them, because you're going to have sort of cultural and philosophical fit. On top of the fact that because those school, excuse me, those schools can themselves recruit a little bit, that the kids that are going to those schools are often drawn there, because they were promising JV or varsity players in their first 2 years. It means the level of talent is probably a little bit higher. You know, it's not the football factory, it's not IMG Academy, but at the same time, there's a little bit more. You know, for we got all the stuff we were just talking about with sort of academics and culture. So
Nice.
I'm again encouraged by that part of the path building.
Well, that's helpful context, for sure. And you know, again, it'll be interesting to see what it is that this staff builds this network around the country around. We know what they're going to try and do in state, but obviously it's going to take a combination of success in state and out of state to build a roster where we want it to be. Looking at this class, are there other needs that you see that have been addressed or that we haven't talked about? You know, I feel like that you're always dealing with roster management and ups and downs across the board, but the cupboard for Tony Elliott and staff wasn't necessarily bare, but went through upheaval for multiple reasons we've already talked about, and then led to, I'd say, some lack of balance across. And we know the O-line, right? So we've discussed that and they've addressed that. And depth, at least, and the D-line has been important. But what else out there, you know, do we want to see them? If it's in the next class, then, or have they already addressed in this class, focusing on building to where they want it to be?
Yeah, for my preference, the offensive line number is still a little bit low. That's something that you've got to have seven or eight, at minimum of seven or eight playable, and by playable, like high regular contributor level
Ready to
guys,
go, right?
just because of injuries, just because of, you know, whatever it is, which means you need at least 15 or so that of guys that are, you know, you've got that sort of one had that top half that's these are our suit them up on Saturdays ready guys, and then the other half that are the developmental that are able to push those guys a little bit. The numbers are still a little bit thin there. I would rather see it closer to 20 than closer to 15. But obviously within the 85 scholarship limit, you've got different things going on there. The defensive backs is something that with the transfers out, that have occurred, making sure there's still plenty of depth there. 'Cause again, we saw how much, you know, a couple of injuries can screw things up, especially to somebody like a safety that's sort of that quarterback of the defense type. So the guys that they've brought in that respect, I think are helpful. There are seems to be still a fair amount of pushing on getting one or two more transfer defensive backs. And again, with as much of Radzinski playing essentially a five defensive back defense, yeah, again, like the offensive line, you got to have a bunch there. That's I think in terms of, The wide receiver room got short, even losing Malik Washington, adding Andre Green and Trell Harris and Chris Tyree all in the window. Malachi Fields staying in the program, even losing a guy like Demeke Starling. Kind of the numbers balance themselves out there, and you've got the right number of top level guys. You've got the Sudarian Harrison, Jaden Gibson guys who are developing behind. You've potentially got your top three wide receivers for next year coming in out of the transfer portal. Which means all of those other guys can develop. You throw in Malachi Fields, all of a sudden your top four are already you've got a pretty good set top four, at least on paper. One guy that's really interesting to me that I'm not sure where things really stand with his transfer recruitment is James Pogorelch, who was a high four-star, almost five-star offensive lineman from the Chantilly area. Who went to Stanford out of high school. Again, played for Heffernan. Heffernan was his offensive line coach at Stanford, and he's been in the transfer in the portal for about a month. So I'm guessing that his plan was probably not to mid-year enroll then. So maybe he's gonna have a little bit more time to kind of feel things out. But that's somebody that would fit the major recruit who went elsewhere and is now looking for a different experience. In that case, Stanford was not the Stanford of old, even when he committed a couple of years ago. The things had started to slip there already. So that's, taking advantage of a coaching change, and bringing a kid back again, somebody who has demonstrated academic interest, academic ability. Bring him back home and play here instead of on the West Coast. So it'll be interesting to see where things shake out, whether, as some of these new bodies and some of the high school, a lot of the high school class is going to mid-year enroll also. So it'll be interesting to see how spring practice shakes out, with guys saying, okay, I knew I was in a position battle, but I lost it out in spring camp. So I'm going to head out of the program, or guys who have that same feeling from other programs. So I would say we're probably not done yet, but I feel really good about where this class puts the program going into spring camp in terms of being able to have those competitions all over the field.
So plenty to follow still, as we count down the days until football season comes back to us in
Just as we all
August
expected,
next year.
right? We can't wait for basketball season to end so we can get back to the good football news.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll be back to talk about basketball for sure in the next episode. They play state today, so we don't know. Yeah, I think if they win against state, then we've sort of shrugged off some of the negativity from that Notre Dame loss. Obviously, they're going to be ups and downs, as there always is. I guess some years we don't really have downs until March, so maybe
Yeah, just get them out of the way
maybe
early
we're
this
getting
year.
some of those downs out of the way. Shout out Tane Murray, who was remarkably productive, considering that people thought he wasn't going to get any minutes. Zach, Ben, and he got plenty of minutes in the last game against Louisville and looked real good. So there's my quick basketball shout out for the week into the
Look, I mean,
league.
this is part of, you can't lose as the higher seed if you're an 11 seed. So, sneak into the tournament and
I will say, I was running the Twitter, and the Notre Dame game was gross. They looked bad and they played bad, and that's bad, and no one wants that. No one's happy with it. But this idea that, like, the direction that Tony Bennett is running the basketball, it's like, guys, we know what Tony Bennett is doing here. And
yeah.
yes, sometimes you lose. Sometimes you get your ass kicked, as we saw against Wisconsin. And sometimes you play pretty well and you beat decent teams like we saw against A&M. Like, there are going to be some ups and downs, and it doesn't mean that this is an NIT team. Could yeah y yes if they play more like they played against Notre Dame, then yeah, they're not going to make the tournament. But why are we anticipating that's going to be the norm from now on through conference play? Is they're going to play that point? I don't get the
Yeah,
negative.
it is still a young team. And like we were talking about with the recruiting class for the football program, that things go haywire one recruiting cycle. it screws things up for a couple of years. If you're a program
Yeah.
that relies on trans on smooth transition planning and developing guys, and that's quintessentially what the basketball program is. And you know, you miss one or two big, and that's a separate conversation to be had about the recruiting philosophy or
Sure.
approach. But you miss on one or two guys, and you know, things hurt for a little while.
Yeah,
So
you miss
it's
on a couple
it
guys and
sucks. No one's
you
gonna say
can't,
it doesn't suck,
right.
but to look bad, but like McNeely wasn't gonna shoot 55% from three the entire year.
What they need, they need working with the guys that they have. They need some more. It's the same shit it always is. They need a little more confidence, a little more aggression, a little less being in their head about waiting for the perfect shot and just go up there and play some ball. McNeely's the best example of that because we could see all the time what he's capable of doing, but they need it from Rhodey. They need it from Buchanan, and those are new faces that it's going to take some time to adjust to the program and feel comfortable and feel aggressive. And it's the same stuff that it always is. And it's probably going to be okay. Yes, I don't know the future. Yes, the wheels could come off. But why are we acting like they've already come off or that it's inevitable. This program's a dumpster fire. What is wrong? I just anyway, I know it's Twitter and that's what that app is for. But there's my spiel to get a little hoops talk. Hopefully they beat State today. And if they don't, it's still probably gonna be okay. But we'll be back
Probably.
to talk about that next week. So thanks, Paul, for running down this football episode. And thank you for listening. Dear listeners, stay tuned to the blog, streakinglawn.com, for more on this. Of course, more on both the men's and women's basketball teams. If you haven't, give us a rating, give us a comment, give us a subscription, and whatever you do, wherever you consume your podcasts, we appreciate that. I always forget to tell people to do that. So please, I've been doing this a long, long time.
You're old. You're getting forgetful. That's fine.
And I do appreciate seeing the amount of subs or seeing the star rankings. So please do that for us because we have fun putting this out there for you. So be back next week, talk about hoops. Till then, go Hoos.